Good morning.
Good morning, everybody.
We have three traditions left, and we're going to try to get through them as expeditiously as we can, because there's a few other things that I have been encouraged to talk a little about, and I'm going to do it. It's my pleasure and my honor. So we're ready for Tradition 10, which says we are each entitled to our own opinion on outside issues. Hence, our combined names ought never be drawn into public controversy. And we believe this means that we're careful about our opinions, and we rely heavily on live and let live between the two of us, not only with people out beyond us, but between the two of us. Because this, if you can't do that, you are usually fired by some form of fear, or power-driven anger or something. So, you know, the next time you get into a heated argument with your mate, if you listen very, very carefully, you'll hear their mind snap shut. And then ask yourself this question: how likely is it that God's will for me is to be screaming at one of his kids that he loves so very much? You know, I don't want to stand before God and say, "Sir, I am so sorry that I have yelled and screamed at your kids that you love so much, only because I could not or would not control myself. I'm so sorry I hurt one of your children." I don't want to have to do that. So, I just think about that when I try to get angry or frustrated with somebody because they're not doing it my way. You know, I have frankly reached the point where much of the time I am just sick of my way. I'm up to here in my way. It never worked before, and it's not improving. So, we try to be courteous. We try to treat others, all others, with patience and tolerance and courtesy. That's what we're all about. You know, we don't attract people through amped up anger, and we also don't speak ill of each other in public. You know, that gets to be a habit. And if you speak ill of other people in public, especially someone like your mate, what you are doing is you are giving that, you know, it's because you're temporarily, momentarily angry or upset or something, and you shoot your mouth off, and in 5 seconds you're not going to feel that way anymore, or maybe five is a little short, but shortly you're not going to feel that way anymore. But if you have blurted it out to the whole world, you have given it an authenticity and a longevity that you don't want it to have. Because your feelings are temporary, but you'll make it permanent if you blurt it out. So that is the essence of the 10th tradition to us. The checklist is, do I give the impression that we have an opinion and I am its keeper? Am I careful to keep confidences given to me by my partner? I'm careful to keep confidences given to me by everybody. My son James called me a while back and said, "Can I talk to you about something?" And I said, "Sure." He said, "Can you not tell anybody?" Anybody is really clear. That means nobody. And I said, "Yeah." So we talked for a long time. Polly said, "Who was that?" I said, "It was James." She said, "What did he want?" I said, "I can't tell you." Well, she went crazy. I mean, she pulled every trick she had out of her little bag and used it on me to find out. And I said, I didn't say anything. I didn't tell her. I said, "If you're just going to have to call him and see if he'll tell you, because I promised him I wouldn't tell anybody." So, am I publicly critical of my mate? No. What would my mate say if you ask her if I loved her? Ask her. See what she says. How important is it for me to be right? We've talked a lot about being right, you know, one of the seven deadly needs and all of that. And it is no longer important to me. The question that I got from my sponsor all the time was, would you rather be right or happy? And I'd much rather be happy. Do I expect or need my partner to see and feel the same as me on issues? Can I depend on the idea that it's none of my business what other people think of me, but my life depends on what I think of them? Yeah, I like that idea, and because first of all, it sets me free. I don't have to worry about what you think of me. It's okay with me for you to think whatever you want to of me. It has gotten to that point with me, and it's a great sense of freedom. It is an enormous sense of freedom. And and in the immortal words of Bob Dylan, I ain't looking for you to feel like me, see like me, or be like me. To those of you who are old enough to be Dylan fans, or who are old enough to be potential Dylan fans. Can I let my partner disagree with my ideas without feeling rejected and without getting defensive? Yeah, I have known for most of my life, maybe all of my life, that I am about a half a bubble off plum. Nobody is just going to agree with me all the time. There is not. And that's okay. It's okay. I like the way God made me. I like who I am. I enjoy me. I can sit in a room alone with me without any discomfort at all. And it's okay. Number 11.
Tradition 11. We individually convey our beliefs and philosophy through attraction rather than promotion. We're each in charge of our own anonymity. And I think I said earlier that Dave and I are very different people. And the thing that we have that keeps us so attached is the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And we both love this program so much and serve it any way we can. But other than that, we're very, very different. And so what happens is it's wonderful to have your own anonymity. And we were just talking about this at breakfast. And one of the things is that we had, you know, for me to have the autonomy to go and do what I want to be able to go and do, and him have the same thing. And I'm getting ready to leave Tuesday night. I'm going to Seattle and to Bellingham, and I'm not going to be back until 2 weeks from Tuesday, which I think is like the 9th or 10th of November. And I'm going to be home one night, and then I have a friend coming in that's going to go stay with us, and then is going to Ladybug. Well, Dave is so kind to me about doing that and gives me that autonomy to go do that. And I do the same for him. He doesn't do it so much anymore, but he used to go on long backpacking trips and such as that, and I don't want to do that. I mean, I would be nothing but a burden to him because I would just be going, I just don't want to do it. So it's just allowing each other to fulfill the things that are important to them without having to be, you know, jealous of the time that you give to that. And life is very short, and I think when you get to be our age, you get to see that you're in the final years of your life, and it's certainly you don't want to spend time bickering about things. And we're really clear about that now. And we've had different ideas about political situations even. And it's okay to have your own autonomy and to have your own thoughts. Just because you're married doesn't mean you have to think alike. We're each individuals. And another aspect of this tradition is that of attraction. And, I'm married to Dave, and, it's like I don't want to just let myself go and not take care of myself and not do the things that keep me attractive to my husband and the same to him. I mean, I want to be an attraction. And I want my marriage. I think we talked about this. In another tradition. I want my marriage to be an attraction. I love being married. I absolutely love being married. And I want to share that with other people, and I want it to be an attraction. And I don't want it to be, you know, an oppressive situation. And I know I have the privilege of working with a lot of women, and I know that there are a lot of people who are really in oppressed situations. And that doesn't make anybody happy, either the oppressee or the oppressor. Nobody is happy. And I want to have your own individual, to be your own individual. Well, that takes a lot of risk. You got to trust each other that, you know, you're going to be out of my sight, you're going to be gone, and I know that I can trust whatever you're going to do. And so what we do is we try to always be an attraction to each other and then be together when we're together. The spirit of this tradition is that we accept another person just as they are, putting both the golden and silver rules into practice within the relationship. The golden rule is, of course, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. The silver rule is don't do for others what they can do for themselves. And it's not my business to be telling Dave when he needs to call Tom or when he needs to go to a meeting or whatever he needs to do. That's not my business. He is in charge of his own program. Now, if he has to do some suffering because of something he's not doing, then that's what he has to do. And he does the same for me. He doesn't tell me, you know, that I need to talk to my sponsor or whatever. But what we try to do is love each other, but like the prophet that Dave read, but not too close. You know, we need to still not lose who we are. We're each an individual. And Dave is not an extension of me, and I am not an extension of him. And I used to think that my children had to behave in a certain way so they'd make me look good. Well, you know, I mean, I can assure you that I have two sons, and the second one is now heading into divorce court. The other one's already been divorced for a couple of years. And one of them was an alcoholic and a drug addict, and the other one was trying to commit suicide and cutting up on himself and hurting himself. These are not, I mean, that, you know, what that says is, you know, I'm thinking everybody's wondering what a terrible mother I am. Well, I was a terrible mother. I was an alcoholic mom, and my kids have paid that price. Well, what I'm finding out is they're their own people. I have to allow them their own walk in life. And one of the things that I think is wonderful is that, you know, giving the autonomy. Dave has really severe back problems. And I'm grateful. I am so grateful that he takes care of that. You know, that he does everything he can to take care of himself and so that he can have as good a quality of life as he can. And it's just allowing each of us to be an individual, that being married does not mean that somebody is the boss of the other person. And I was talking to someone earlier this morning, and it's, if you work with a lot of women, you see that a lot of women get into very bullying relationships. They seem to be very attracted sometimes to bullies, and especially it seems alcoholic women, somehow or another, they, you know, they like the bad boys. And so I personally have never liked bad boys. I'm too self-centered. I want them to be paying attention to me, not themselves. So, you know, but I just, So what happens is that nobody's got the right to pound on somebody else and all of that stuff. We're each our own individuals. Okay, so let's look at the checklist. Is my relationship treated with care in public? And Dave and Dave never did say bad things to me in public, but I have done it to him. And I mean, I have learned to bite my tongue when I feel like tearing his face off and wait till we get in the car. Do I think my relationship is attractive to others? I do. I think I have an attractive relationship. I try to show my husband respect, and he shows me respect. I want that. I want it to be an attraction. Is my partner ever embarrassed or humiliated by my appearance or actions? I'm not so sure he's ever been humiliated by my appearance, but I can assure you that I've gotten a little out of control with my actions. Do I give relationships a bad name? I hope not. Am I guilty of promotion rather than attraction? One of the things that I do is I believe in marriage. So sometimes with the women I sponsor, I will kind of promote the institution of marriage because I do believe in the institution of marriage. Can I go about my affairs without giving my partner advice on how he should conduct his affairs? Well, Dave is much better about that than me. I often feel like that he needs some help. So that one is a little more on my side than him. Can I do good things for my relationship anonymously? I love to do that. When I had my great AA sponsor in California, Ellen, she used to say, go do something nice for someone and don't get found out. And what I try to do is I just try to do little things for Dave and not let him know I did it, just do it. And it's amazing. Sometimes he'll see it and sometimes he won't, but when he does, it's so exciting. But to just do something nice and don't have to promote that. Can I give my partner the right to be wrong? Dave and I are really good about that. And I want to share one little story about that. Dave gave me a beautiful piece of luggage one Christmas. Did I tell the story already in this? I don't. Okay. Sometimes I can't remember if I've already told the story or not. He gave me a beautiful piece of luggage for Christmas, and it came in a box. And so when, you know, we got through unwrapping it and everything, I put it back in the box. And then, by mistake, I put it out on the trash. And the luggage got picked up by the trash. And this not only was beautiful, but it was expensive. It was still when we were employed. And I was devastated. I wish you could have seen how kind Dave was to me because I had done that. And I said, you know, aren't you mad at me? You've got to be mad at me. You spent all that money. There's no way I can do anything about it. I gave it to the trash. Dave says, why would I say one more word to you? Look what you're doing to yourself. I mean, and that's my husband. That's the way, instead of just yelling and screaming at me what a stupid idiot I was, he was so kind. So those are the kind of things that I'm grateful for in my relationship. How do I feel when my partner criticizes the way I'm trying to live my recovery program? Dave and I had, when we got married, we were both sober. Now, sometimes that doesn't always happen, you know, relationships, somebody gets sober while they're in the relationship. But what we did is that was just kind of one of the things we talked about, is hands off of each other's recovery program. And I have a sponsor, and it's not Dave. And Dave has a sponsor, and it's not me. And that part, we don't get into each other's program. Do I think that he needs to do things a lot of times that he's not doing? You bet. Is it my business to tell him? No. So, and again, it's that, you know, restraint of pen and tongue till it just nearly bites it in half because you can't say. So, which do I give more to my partner, positive strokes or negative zingers? Dave and I try not to do that. I was more that in our relationship in the beginning, because I tend to have a mean streak. Dave doesn't have a mean streak. What happens when one partner in the relationship is getting noticeably better and the other is not? That has not been our situation. Dave and I are both very active in AA, but we do different things. I tend to sponsor a lot of people, and I travel a lot. And Dave is more inclined. He is very much into like area service and district service and such as that. And I can't go there. If I go to one of those meetings, I walk out and I'm almost rageful. But he has the political, you know, attitude that he can handle that. You know, he can argue for 2 hours on a $5 coffee pot. I can't do that. And so what happens is he's usually he's been our area treasurer and different things like that, and he's very interested in that level of service. So what happens is we kind of we love AA, but we serve kind of differently. So that's been a blessing in our relationship. Tradition 12.
This tradition says anonymity or selflessness is a spiritual foundation of our way of life as partners, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. This says that selflessness is the spiritual foundation of our relationship. I used to think that meant my lofty principles before your contaminated, unwholesome personality. I have since found out that it means AA principles before my contaminated, unwholesome personality. One of the great privileges of being in a 12-step program like we're in Alcoholics Anonymous, is the opportunity we get to be of help to God's kids. You don't know who you are. You have no idea what a splendid person you can be until you learn how to love other people and how to help them in whatever they need doing. Chuck Chamberlain used to say, you know, in his business, he's not in business, he's just helping God's kids doing whatever they need. I have another friend in Montana who uses a new pair of glasses as the sales manual for his company. And he tells his salesman, go in to call on your customers, and if you can be of help, if you can figure out some way, see some way to be of help and of service to them, then do it. And if you can't, then don't waste their time. Just tell them you'll see them next time around and leave. So, you know, we have learned that lessons can be learned by everyone, from everyone. You know, some people are going to teach you what might be a better way for you to go. And some people are going to teach you what not to do. You know, they're just going to be a bad example. It's like if you get cut off on the freeway a lot, maybe it's you that's the bad driver, you know. And the people that are cutting you off are just the divine teacher. So if you ask yourself, how do I treat my mate? How do I treat my children? How do I treat my friends? And if you don't like the answers, then the next question to me is, what can I do to change? What can I do to change? Nobody got here knowing how to do all this. Nobody got here really knowing how to live their life. I mean, I got here as a derelict, a self-made derelict. And I mean, I do that really well too. And, you know, so we all have to learn, and sometimes it's painful and sometimes it's slow. And, you know, and our answer has been AA. You know, our answer has clearly been Alcoholics Anonymous, the steps, the traditions, the principles, the friendships that we have found here. So those are our traditions, and we, in the time that we have left, I've been asked to go over a couple of things, and the people that asked me this didn't realize they were asking me this. They didn't realize what they were asking me. But I have some things that are a cornerstone of my life. They are extremely important to me. They keep me on track. They keep me centered. They keep me upright. And they keep me going. And I have never shared these in public or in private with anybody. So what I'm about to say is you are the first to have ever heard this from me. Our book says in A Vision for You that you frequently hear read at meetings, or at least we do around the country. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. Okay, that's a big statement. That's a big statement for a guy who's been sober 3 years. And who had a monumental ego. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. And then he goes on to say, we realize we know only a little. That's huge for a guy with a big ego. We know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you than to us. It doesn't say, I'm going to tell Dave what you need to know. God is going to disclose more to you. To you. And maybe it's what he has on some other occasion disclosed to me, and maybe it's not. Maybe what God discloses to you is for your ears only. But he's going to disclose more to you and to us. Ask him, don't ask me, ask God what you can do each day. And so that makes it pretty clear, okay? The door is open. We do not intend these 164 pages to be the end-all, the do-all, the everything. We don't intend these to be the everything. We realize we know only a little. Here's everything we know right now. But we realize we know only a little. When that was written, we had no World Service Organization. We had no central office. We had a meeting in Akron and a meeting in Brooklyn, New York. That's all we had when this was written. We had no Al-Anon. We had no traditions. We had no grapevine. Look at what God has already disclosed. My God. We are in 180-something countries. We have 57 different translations of the Big Book. If you're blind, we have a Braille Big Book for you. It is quite clear that God's going to disclose more. So it makes it very clear to me that I want to be as closely aligned with God as I can be. How close do I want to be? I want to sit in his lap. So there are all kinds of places to look. About 2,500 years ago, a guy named Lao Tzu wrote a book called The Tao, 81 verses long. He's leaving China. He says, I've had enough of these crazy people. I'm getting the hell out of here. And he got to the border, and the border guard said, why don't you write down your wisdom before you leave? So he pulled his yak off to the side of the road and wrote the Tao. That's the legend. Is it true or not? Who cares? But that's the legend. And I was tempted to read that book, and I was tempted to read the Wayne Dyer version of it. Well, I didn't want to tell anybody that. That's a kind of a pop psychologist guy. I'm much too profound to read Wayne Dyer, for crying out loud. But I'd had a lot of luck with reading his book on intention, so I read it, and it was beautiful. He used 10 different translations, and I'm not here promoting his book. I'm just telling you what I did. He used 10 different translations and captured the essence of all of it and commented on each one of those 81 verses. And it added a whole dimension to my life, that kind of wisdom, the wisdom of Lao Tzu and wherever he got it from. Enriched my life. There was a guy named Carlos Castaneda. I have no idea what led me to him. But I read a couple of his books. One was The Active Side of Infinity, and the other one was The Road to Someplace. I don't remember right offhand. Pardon? He said, intent is a force that exists in the universe. when sorcerers, those who live of the source, or those who live of God, beckon intent, it comes to them and sets up the path for attainment. Goethe, German philosopher, said, when you commit, the universe conspires with you to make it happen. It's a very famous quote. You can find it. But this says that people who live of the source always accomplish what they set out to do. Is that true? Well, let me give you some very easily understood advantages. We believed, human beings believed, that if we really wanted to, we could fly. And we really wanted to. And I came here in a huge jet. And it's only about 100 years since we learned to fly at Kitty Hawk, but we thought that we could, we wanted to, we tried to, and we did it. We have done it. We thought, wouldn't it be great if we could go to the moon? We've walked on the moon. Everything we have ever envisioned as humans, we have done. Why? Because we have the vision and we have the intent. Where does the vision come from? I think it comes from God. He made us. If he didn't want us to have visions, he probably wouldn't have turned that, flipped that switch when we were born. So I wrote out my intentions for my life, and I read them often. I read them every morning for a long, long time. But every morning when I wake up, I say the third step prayer. God, I offer myself to you to do whatever the hell you want to with me. It's quite clear I don't know what to do with me. So do whatever you want to with me. And make me an instrument of your peace. So I wrote out my intentions for my life, and I read these to myself often, and I will share those with you. And as far as I'm concerned, if you want them, you can have them, but I don't think you should copy mine. I think you should figure out for yourself, what are your intentions, you know, and make them lofty. If we can sit here, people like you and I, you know, the people in this room could have also invented the airplane. We have enough smarts. We just didn't have the vision or the tenacity, or that we didn't want it bad enough. But if we had, the people in this room could have invented the airplane. It's not that complicated. In fact, the fundamentals of flight are pretty simple. But anyway, so my intentions are, my most basic intention is to recklessly love God and for my whole life to be dedicated to and directed by Him, to serve His purpose for me without complaint, whatever that purpose may be. My intention is to live in the present moment, exulting in the great adventure of the life God has given me. My intention is to love all of God's creation and to shine with that love at all times. My intention is to recognize God as my source and to detach from my ego. My intention is to share what I have learned about God and His universe so that I may be a witness to His love, His generosity, and His understanding. My intention is to have good mental, spiritual, physical, and health and habits, radiating an enthusiastic attitude and a happy disposition. My intention is to be free of anger, self-pity, judgment, gossip, and resentment, and all their corrosive manifestations. My intention is to trust what comes through me, serving as a channel of God's love and grace, judging none of it. My intention is to have a quiet and gentle mind. My intention is to nourish my sobriety so that I may share it with others and to be of service to anyone who comes or is sent my way. My intention is to be prosperous and to enjoy and be grateful for the prosperity that God has given me. My intention is to fully accept who and what I am, to delight in the gifts God has given me, and to never criticize them. We are children of God. By what right do we criticize ourselves? God has given us the ability to be whatever we want to be. And if you don't like who you are, just tell God you want to change. And be willing and cooperate with Him.
I have
seven daughters, or eight or nine or something. I had two children, and my children were badly damaged by my alcoholism. My family, my original family, was just torn asunder. My first wife and I are now really good friends, have been for a long time, and we are very, very comfortable with each other now. We don't talk very often, but when we do, there is a warmth and an understanding there that is palpable, and it is really great. And my daughter and I have never ever meshed intellectually, emotionally, in any way. We don't see eye to eye. We don't get along. We never have. And I'm okay with that being the way it is, because that's the way it is. I have to be okay with that. I mean, I have quit fighting reality. I don't do that. You know, if that's the way it is. It's okay. But I had a son, and he and I were pretty well torn apart by alcoholism, but we were coming back together pretty good. And my son died in 2002. He was 42 years old, and he died of a very aggressive, virulent form of lung cancer that was brought on by AIDS. That was made possible by AIDS. And my son gave me a great, great gift. He removed from me every last shred of homophobia that I might have ever had. And I loved him with all my heart, and I am proud of him like nobody I have known. I have his big book. I know what he's highlighted. I know what he's underlined. I know his questions that are out in the margin. I know his observations that are written in the margins of his big book. And my son was a spiritual giant, and got there in 9 years, much quicker than I did. And I'm not a spiritual giant yet, but he was. He did things that, he was a fabulous guy. And he and I were coming together pretty well. I had a deep longing for a daughter. I just really wanted to be the father of a girl. And I wanted to be the right kind of father. So I mentioned yesterday that I went to church. One of Polly sponsors a girl named Melina. She's one of my daughters. She asked me if I would be her father. She has two girls aged 20 and 21. And they asked me if I would be their grandfather, because they don't have one. And so Melina said, "You want to go to church with me?" And I said, "Yeah, I do." So I went. I have been going back ever since. That's the one I told you where the guys up there starting a series. He captured me, you know. Like, it was seen to that I was captured on that visit. And sometime later, I'm in line to give blood at this church, because they're having a blood drive. And this girl that I had never seen before was standing behind me, and she said, "Do you mind if I come when you come?" And I said, "No." She said, "I just want to see a friendly face. I've never done this before, and I'm kind of scared." And so we showed up together. We have mutual friends at that church, it turns out, although I'd never seen her before, and she'd never seen me, even though we were going to the same church. And one day she told me that she had a daddy-sized hole in her heart and asked me if I would be her daddy. And, you know, and I'm thinking, say no to that, big shot. And then came another and another and another. You know, so I have two daughters in Bellingham, Washington. I have a daughter in Long Beach, California. Her name is Crystal. Crystal is a lesbian. I could not possibly care less. I don't care what Crystal is. Crystal is a beautiful young woman that I just, she asked me, would I be her daddy? I have a daughter in Dallas, Texas. She asked me if I would be her daddy. And this is what they call me. They call me Dad or Daddy or Daddy Dave or one of those things. And this is all thanks to you, and this is a longing in my heart that I had for a long time, and this all this makes me very, very happy that this has happened to me. I have three daughters in Jacksonville, Florida. My oldest daughter is 53 years old. My youngest daughter is just approaching 40. And I am their father. They have asked me to be their father, because they were treated so badly. All of them are in AA but two. And you can't imagine how profoundly I appreciate and love my wife for letting me have these girls as my daughters. It can't be easy. They're all gorgeous. You know? And I don't care what anybody thinks about that. You know, traditionally, you know, goofy old guys going around saying these young girls are their daughters. I know what that sounds like. You know, I know what it looks like. I don't care. It's okay. If you want to think that. But this is a gift to me. I spent most of my sobriety never feeling like I was really of any good to anybody, really. Because I just, you know, Polly is so, she is so warm and approachable and comfortable to be around. And I was always just kind of scratchy, you know. I mean, Michael was here yet. Michael has known me for 25, 26, 30 years, something like that. And most of the time, Michael, you can ask her, most of the time that Michael has known me, I was not really that approachable. I wasn't that warm. I wasn't that friendly. I really didn't care for people all that much. I was okay. I mean, I wasn't really intentionally obnoxious or anything, but I just wasn't warm and fuzzy. And to think that God has finally let me be of service to some of his kids and has filled a hole in me that was very, very old and that I was convinced would never be filled is just beyond my wildest dreams. You know, I can't even tell you what that is like. But it means everything to me, and I am so profoundly grateful to my wife that she lets me have that. She didn't like it a lot at first, you know. But my one of my two daughters in the one in Bellingham, she is not even in AA. She drinks. Once in a while she gets drunk. She's just a chatterbox when she gets drunk. But she's not an alcoholic. And she's just fun as hell. And so at 1:26 a.m. last New Year's Eve, my phone rang. And it was Melissa. And she said, "Hi, Daddy, can you come get us?" They were at a party, and they didn't want to drive home because they'd been drinking. I have shown up at parties in worse condition than they were in at the end of the evening. You know? But to think that I could have a relationship with a child who would feel comfortable enough with me to call me at 1:30 in the morning on New Year's Eve and get me out of bed and want to know if would I come get them is beyond my wildest dreams. You know, I didn't fuss at them. All I said was, "You bet, sugar, I'll be right there. Where are you?" That means so much to me that at last I feel like And it opens all kinds of other doors. And now I'm a much better sponsor than I was before to the guys that I sponsor. My whole life has improved. So whatever your situation, whatever you think about you, whatever length of time you have spent in AA, you have not seen anything yet. I have grown as much in the last 5 years as I have grown in any 10-year period before that in my whole life. And you know why I get to be a daddy? Because there are 7 or 8 or 9 fathers out there that yelled at their kids like I did, that didn't treat them well, that weren't there for them. You know, why would they need me if that weren't true? Why would they be looking for a father? And so I understand. Every one of my girls, if you love them and show them kindness and interest and let them be who they are, encourage them to be who they are, they bloom like a flower. If you yell and scream at them, they shrivel up. So I've never shared these things with anybody before. And I'm glad I got the opportunity to do it now, because it, you know, things that are important to you, things that make your heart really sing, you need to put those out in the world, because somebody needs to hear them. I don't know who. That doesn't matter. But somebody does. And so I just felt like it's my turn. So anybody have any questions? Anybody? If anything that we have shared up here that you've seen in this book, if you want it and it's not already on the internet, let me know at this website. Let me know and I'll put it out there. There are some prayers out there. Oh, and I wanna close with a prayer. So.
That's about 15
minutes. Okay. Well, I think we're pretty close to through.
Unless somebody's got something they want to say, ask, but comment on, whatever.
Yeah, questions or anything?
Okay.
Okay. Okay. This is the prayer that I wrote. These notes, as some of you may have already figured out, are over 65 pages long. That's another one of the things that I use to prove to you that I'm about a half a bubble off plum. I got started on these and they were about 15 or 20 pages long, and they just grow. And I feel my feeling is, and I don't promote this, it's me. My feeling is that to make this really clear in my mind how I really feel, that it's easier if I put it on paper, if I sit down and write it and think about it and look at what I've written and say, is that what I mean? And so I have written this prayer, and it's written down too. And my way of thinking is that I think, after what God has done for me, it is appropriate that I spend some time really thinking about what I would like to say to Him in an AA prayer. So the prayer is, Father, before we end our AA event, we pause to offer our thanks to You, our mighty God. Once long ago, You blessed us and gave us a destiny. And when You brought us out of the bondage of alcoholism to freedom, You gave us the promise that all alcoholics could be so blessed, and that with Your help, we could be free at last. It has come to pass in every generation for all who have thoroughly followed Your path, that you have given us a new freedom and a new spirit. It happened to those who preceded us, who came to this program seeking only a way to remain alive, but found a place of promise and hope and sobriety. It happens to us still in our time as you lead all of us into the vision of a life that is happy, joyous, and free. And so with hearts full of gratitude and love, we join our brothers and sisters all over the world today and every day of our lives to gratefully thank you for Alcoholics Anonymous, for the Al-Anon family groups, for our friends and our families and our sobriety, and for your love. May we do your will always. Amen.
Thank you so much for allowing us to be here. Thank you for the pictures of Lois's desk and Bill's desk. They were just fabulous gifts and the privilege of just spending the weekend with you. Thank you so much.
Tell you how much you were in my heart. All right, we'll take a little break.